Welcome to the Love Positivism podcast. I'm Shireen Oberg, and I'm a yoga teacher and author devoted to the path of healing and heart-based living. And I want to help you to step into what you truly are and to your highest potential. On this podcast, I share with you tools and insights to help you move ever forward on your spiritual and healing path. With guests from all over the world, from different wisdom traditions, I wish to create a web of loving energy that permeates the whole world to create more love and peace. You can connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for more guidance and love. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited to be here with Dr. Lalita. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. This topic is so important. And first of all, congratulations on your book that is coming out in a few weeks. It must feel so beautiful to birth this into the world.
Thank you. I really like the word that you just used, birth it into the world. That's beautiful. I never thought of it like that. But it really does feel like it's a book that's needed right now because so many people relate to this topic.
Definitely, and it's so needed on the healing journey to understand, like, why are we doing the things that we are doing? Because sometimes we work with energetic healing, and it is everything, like the physical, the emotional, everything needs to come into place. So I think it's a really important topic. And the book is called High Functioning Anxiety, A Five-Step Guide to Calming the Inner Panic and Thriving. Yeah. And Dr. Lalita Suglani is an award-winning psychologist, renowned leadership empowerment expert, international speaker, and author. And her book that is coming out now in the end of the May, she believes that the key to achieve a real lasting success and happiness in all areas of life lies within our own mind. She has seen how through personal growth and self-awareness, we can learn to harness our thought patterns, gain control of our internal voice, and cultivate a positive mindset and create the life and career of our dreams. And over the years, Lalita has worked with adults, children, and families, and within organizations such as the NHS, schools, charities, and private organizations. She is committed to helping individuals on their journey to achieving emotional and psychological well-being. And she is on a mission to help transform lives through fostering understanding and acceptance of the emotions, attachments, and relationships we hold. And her goal is to awaken people to their inner power, allowing them to thrive and flourish in life. That's a beautiful mission. I love that. It's so lovely to have you here. And I'm, first of all, so curious how your life path took you to where you are today and why you're doing this.
So for me, like growing up, I'm one of five. And I'm the second oldest. So the second oldest, naturally, I became a caregiver looking after everyone else, like all the young children underneath. And I've always loved that. But for me, it's almost like, okay, that became a role that I sort of like enforced. And growing up as a second generation ethnic minority as well, just going to and growing up in a way where as a woman as well, in my culture, it's almost like you were seen as second. So you would get different priorities. So if, for example, I remember growing up, if me and my brother were there, my grandma would be like, oh, let him eat first. So it would just be a simple thing like that. But the messages that I would get from that is that I'm not enough. I'm not enough. So I grew up continuing, I'm not enough, seeking this external validation of being a caregiver because I was needed. People wanted and felt supported, and I felt enough by doing that. So I continued on my journey, but I became that people pleaser. I became the perfectionist. I became very living outwards. So I understood what was going on through my therapy journey. I ended up falling into therapy And that was because I had to do it because I was studying psychology. And as part of the course, you had to go into therapy. And I remember sitting in therapy thinking, what am I going to talk about? I've got nothing to talk about. Everything's fine. And then I had my first session and then second session, and I was very sort of like closed off. And then as I started on that journey, I started to understand more of my patterns. And I was like, this makes so much sense. But then I would still feel like I get it. I get everything. But now how do I navigate? How do I move forward? How do I like put boundaries in? How do I manage this anxiety that comes up in me that I'm now feeling and I now acknowledge is there? And the more I started to delve into that, I realized it was more of a holistic type of therapy that I needed. And that was to really connect mind, body, but sit with the parts of me. So sit with my anxiety, understand where do I feel it, notice what's coming out. Because intellectualizing it wasn't enough. I got to a certain point and I was like, I need to understand more. And naturally, when I started working with people, I started noticing more and more that the root of a lot of people's symptoms, I call them symptoms, are they don't feel enough. So people underneath everything, they don't feel enough, and they keep showing up in a way where they seek this validation, but the validation is just temporary. So it might be that someone might have certain behaviors that they're presenting with day to day, but underneath that, it all comes back to they don't feel enough. But if they don't hit this idea of I need this external validation, if they don't get it, they then feel that anxiety. And anxiety is like, there's a threat, there's something that's happening, but you need to understand how to navigate the anxiety. Otherwise, you get caught in, I need to do this pattern, I need to do this, because that's the only thing that you know stops that anxiety. And I point to my stomach here, because that's where I hold my anxiety and I feel my anxiety. So if you don't understand how to navigate the deeper and regulate your emotions, then you're going to struggle with disconnecting from the pattern. So for me, I'm like, right, this is my mission, because I've been through it myself. I've understood it. But I also see the importance of really deep diving and not just saying, right, stop presenting in this way. It's like, no, we need to go deeper and understand the root of where does this all come from for people?
Yeah, that's really important. And how connected it is. I'm just like reflecting on how our cycles, and like we spoke about earlier, like the weather can impact this, but there is like this underlying, because it's also a difference between having like, because all, you know, in Chinese medicine, all emotions are important to be felt because they have a purpose. And anxiety is connected to the water element, which is very active during winter, actually, and the cold and the dark and all of that. But I'm also thinking about our inner cycles, where as women especially, where we have these, you know, when we do go into our yin state, that inner world, that must be also very difficult to handle if you already have that underlying anxiety, because there's so much happening in life, in the world, there's so many factors. But then our internal cycles, how have you seen when you work with women, the end of the cycle, the menstrual cycle, how is that amplified then?
See, I think people, they don't pay attention to it, because they're so disconnected and they are so focused on living outwards, and they are living in a space where they're hypervigilant on everyone else around them and sensitive to other people, that they don't use them tools to go inwards and start understanding, hang on, if I'm feeling a little bit low this month, or if I'm feeling a little bit, I'm feeling a little bit more hungry, they don't notice that because they're disconnected from these feelings. But what I do notice is when people start growing and start learning to disconnect from the outside world and start connecting inwards, they do notice like, okay, I notice my mood might change at this point in time during my cycle, or I noticed this, because they start to look inwards, which is really interesting, because everyone has different moods, and some people before their menstrual cycle, they might be feeling really energetic, whereas other people, they may not be feeling that way. So I don't think there's this is the way that every sort of woman feels and is. I think it's very different. And then some people may have or be taking the pill or have a coil, and then that can then impact on how they might be feeling week to week. So it is trying to understand, okay, do I have a pattern? Or also acknowledging, there is that side of things, but also your food, your diet, your hydration. It's looking at all the core fundamentals of how you're nurturing your physical body, and also movement. Like, I know there are a lot of individuals who are high functioning, but they throw themselves into exercise, they throw themselves into movement. But why are they, what's the intention behind their movement? Is it because it's just a tick, another thing that they've done, another thing, and it's like, okay, I've done all of these things. But that's, again, another outside in living. We're trying to live from the inside out and be more intentional, try to understand, actually, why do I want to feel like I need to go to yoga every day? Why do I feel that I like I need to go running every day? So I think for me, it's like trying to understand all the foundations, and everyone is so individual in the way that they show up and the experiences that they've had. And it's just about them learning more about understanding what's the messages my body is telling me and giving me, and how do I listen to what's going on.
Yeah, I love that, living from within and not from expectations. And I, just to make it like even more foundational, because I also in my own book wrote about anxiety and depression in particular a little bit, but not from your background. You've worked with it so much more. But let's say that there are, because I've noticed that with people, that they are feeling something but don't know how to put it, and it can be a mix. But if you would, if someone is listening now and like curious about this and trying to scan themselves a little bit, what would the difference be, the main differences between feeling anxious and anxiety and like depression and that low energy state?
So I think there's different types of anxiety. There's anxiety that you can get where it's just there all the time, and it becomes more of a disorder because it's there all the time. It prevents you, it stops you from doing things. But the anxiety that I tend to focus more on is the high functioning side. And that's the anxiety that's often hidden. It's the anxiety that's always there, but you're very high functioning as a result of the anxiety. So behind the scenes, you might be someone who's struggling with your thoughts. And what I mean by that is you might be overthinking. Worrying constantly, catastrophizing, scared of failing, having like the imposter syndrome in the background as well. But no one sees that, because the way you present to the world is you're hardworking, you've got it all together. You come across like you're very social and that you like being around people. You make life seem very simple and easy. It's a bit like the way I explain it, it's a bit like the swan. So you see the swan and it's so gracefully just gliding through, and underneath it's sort of like paddling away. And that's what happens in life with high functioning anxiety, is we present in the world that we've got everything together. We're okay. Look, we've got this. And people see you. But underneath, there's so much more going on. But we are so afraid of showing that side. And that's where we just keep trying to suppress it and suppress it away, because we're ashamed, we're embarrassed. And maybe also we feel a little bit out of control because we don't actually know what's going on there. So it's easier just to keep it out of sight and out of mind. But it still comes through in our behavior. So like I said, it's we have thoughts of overthinking, which is one of the huge ones. You're always rushing around. You don't know how to look after yourself. But if someone needs you, you're there in a blink, because you want to people please. You want to be this perfectionist and show up in that way. And that's different to depression, because with depression, again, there's again different types of depression. So you may have what we were just talking about earlier is the seasonal affective disorder. So that's a type of low mood that we can get because we're not getting light during the winter months. And there are people that are very sensitive to that, and their circadian rhythm is connected to that. And there's a lot of research that's gone into that, where it shows that during these months, people will find themselves feeling very low, feeling like, what's the point? I don't want to get up. Everything feels very heavy and draining. And then there's other ways and solutions you can help yourself through that, which is you can get lamps, SAD lamps, where they help you, and they almost like start to, they recreate the sunrise. So when you're sleeping, your body thinks that that's the sun rising, and your circadian rhythm then is connected to that. And then we have depression, where depression can really stop you from doing anything. You really feel like, I can't do anything. I don't want to. I don't see the point in it. Everything feels hopeless. You feel really lonely, disconnected, and you don't really see a way out of there. And that can stop you from functioning everyday life. And then we have the high functioning depression, which is all about you functioning again, doing things. But behind the scenes, you're feeling so heavy, so drained, so lonely, thinking like, what am I doing with my life? And having all these like really deep, really dark thoughts, but you still show up, you still push yourself, and no one would have a clue that this is what's actually going on behind the scenes for you.
That's like really kind of, it feels like anxiety is like a young state, while it is, they have both aspects within them all the time, but one is more young, like outwardly, because it's about that, you know, the thoughts and like the energy going upwards, the other one is going down and like deeper within. But I think that it's interesting how life events can also trigger certain emotional states. But then, like you said, it's a difference of having emotions that are just temporary, but they change and they come back and go, but something that becomes more chronic. But what are like the five symptoms that are, just for someone who wants to know, like the main, was it, one is overthinking, like you said, right? Yeah.
So the symptoms of high functioning anxiety is, number one is you being that perfectionist. You, the archetype there is you feeling like the need of, I need to do things right. Now with perfectionism, you have these high expectations of yourself. Mm. So you have these expectations where you think, I need to do this, I need to do this. And if you don't do it to that level, you feel like you're a failure. You blame yourself. Your inner critic comes out. You have this imposter within you screaming out. And that leads us to the second point, which is catastrophizing. So you will think of all the possible things that can happen in a situation or in a conversation that might happen or has happened, that you could be sitting there really disconnected, having all these different thoughts. And what about if this happens or this happens or this happens? Again, your body doesn't know the difference between your imagination and what you're imagining. So there is still a physical impact on when you're catastrophizing. And there's times where catastrophizing can be useful. But when it's a detriment, where you're overthinking and you're constantly having these catastrophizing thoughts all the time after different conversations, that's where then it can become a problem. Then we have over-responsible. This is where perhaps you struggle with boundaries. And by you struggling with boundaries, you can't say no to things. So someone's like, can you do this? Or say if you're in a circle and there's something, someone has to pick something from the middle of the circle and no one else is moving. And then you're just like, I'll do it. So you keep adding things. And then in the background, you're struggling to make ends meet. And you might be the one who's then up at like 7, 8 o'clock trying to finish this work while other people are out. And that can then lead to resentment and you feeling frustrated because you think, well, what about me? But no one knows that because people think, oh, like you're the person who always does it. We also have like anticipatory anxiety, and that's you thinking about or anticipating what's going to happen next. So the what ifs. So what if this and what if this and what if this? And then by you doing that, it leads us to the other symptom, which is you always need to feel like you need to be in control. And being in control means I need things to go in a certain way. And that's why I'll double and triple check things, because if I don't, something bad might happen. And I don't want anything bad to happen, because if it does, again, I don't know how to manage that emotion. So it's easier just to make sure everything's in control. So rather than trusting someone else to do something, I'll just do it. And you end up being this responsible individual. So they're all connected to one another, but they're all actually separate, because they all, the reason why they present, it comes from a different place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think many people can relate to that. And it's kind of like a symptom of something so big and structural and so ingrained in society. So it's been like a programming for us to come to this point, and it's only up to us to work with it, because society won't help out, since these expectations and things do sometimes feel out of control, since we're so connected to world events, we're seeing like things like that happening, that is it's so beyond our control and it's like overwhelming. And then in our own lives, things can happen. And just spontaneously, I started thinking about how this manifests and how it can be, how it's presented in parenting. Like, how does that come out for parents? Because then you have all of these things, and then on top of that, you have children that you have to take care of. What have you seen when you're working with mothers or fathers who have...
See, this is again a really interesting one, because when we essentially high functioning anxiety is that you're struggling in the background to regulate your emotions, and the way that you learn to regulate them from a young age is that you've just thrown yourself into work, thrown yourself into being busy. So when we then think of parenting and what can happen with parenting is you now have a child and you're trying to regulate and trying to support the child. And it's like you trying to make sense of, okay, what do I need to do? But you also have your own patterns that you're sort of stuck in. And again, every parent is very different in how they show up. But sometimes people might think, okay, I can't keep going in this way. Like, what is this? What am I doing? Because I'm feeling exhausted. I'm feeling tired. I'm not able to be there for my child. And often when you have gone through like emotional neglect growing up, you may show up thinking, I want to break that cycle. I want to make sure that I'm the best that I can be for my child. And often sometimes it takes that to make you want to do your inner work, to start to realize what's coming up here for me. What's this about? What's happening here? So it gives you that insight into what is happening. But there's, every individual is very different. So some people might continue just, this is another thing to keep me busy. So they get into that same routine. But again, they hit that brick wall at some point in their life where they start reflecting and think, how did I do all of that? How did I manage all of that? Because there is a lot that happens. And often when you have little ones, you haven't got the space or the time to process and to sit and to reflect and think about things. But it's like, okay, where can I create that time for me to be able to do that, where it might be when the little one's sleeping or when not feel completely exhausted. So by the time your head hits that pillow, you're just like, you're gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of also reflecting a little bit how if we're like adults who are trying to fill our time constantly with things, maybe that turns into always having activities for the children as well, which I don't know how it was. Like when I grew up, it wasn't common to have that many extracurricular activities. I don't know how it is for other families. But
no, I completely agree. I think I was sent to tuition. But that was to get into the secondary schools. We had like this 11 plus that we had to do here. Mm-hmm. So I had this extra tuition. But otherwise, I would be like sat playing a game, like not on the computer because computers weren't around at that point. But I would be making myself useful doing something. But also like there'd be chores to do and things like that. Whereas now, I think sometimes parents, they want the best for their kids. Yeah. And wanting the best sometimes means give them everything. But I know friends as well, like on the weekend, I'll ask them, oh, what are you up to? They're like, oh, it's holidays and I've got to entertain the kids. And literally when you look at their timetable of what they're planning on doing, it's like, be out at 9. Then we've got 1 hour of this and another hour. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? You don't have to fill the time. And also, what are you teaching the kids? Are you teaching them that they always need to be busy as well? And that there's always something else. Like, actually, you've just had like an hour of going to a different activity. So maybe now you have some time, like maybe just going to the park or sitting there or reflecting. It doesn't have to be another activity. So sometimes that can be like the projection of your high functioning, which then we're sharing or we're role modeling to our children as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's so that's why I said it's like a very big systemic thing as well, and what's normalized and what is expected. And then I think
it's also like it is hard being a parent. Like it is really difficult because there's so many expectations. And nowadays there's social media. So you look at what other parents might be doing. Yeah. And it's only a fraction. But that subconsciously can send you a message that I'm not doing enough. And when we've got this comparison that we're always looking at what the other families are doing, we then put this expectation on ourselves. And that's why doing our own inner work is actually, what is it as a family that is enough for us rather than trying to reach out and keep striving for, we need to be enough. We need to, well, actually you are enough as you are. And there will be times where you do jump into do this and do this and do this. And that's okay. Like, don't beat yourself up about it, but reflect on what is this? And does my child want to do this? Or does my child prefer doing arts and crafts or spending an hour doing that at home, or spending some time, like, I don't know, just singing or doing something, like going in the garden and playing?
Yeah. It's like trying to, because it, maybe it's also part of one's own, like, you know, this thing that you said that, that you have to be, we would say in Swedish, like, you're always performing, you're always like trying to do something that, that is, maybe you find makes your time more valuable, which then actually, I think that when you have so many plans, the time just goes by and then you don't know what did you do and why did you do it? And I think that we talked a lot about the weather. I think it's, especially here in the Nordics and in northern parts of the world, it is quite hard to, since the grounding aspect is kind of hard when we cannot sit and be in nature in the same way, especially here when it gets like ice and snow. And the, again, the water element is everywhere. So it does create some, and the darkness. Somehow it's really important time now in the spring and summer to ground and to be with the elements, to come back, to regulate your own inner elements and to get that nourishment. And I also want to say that how important it is. I think that in the healthcare system, many people go there and I think, of course, they do test these things, but how in Chinese medicine, blood deficiency can lead, which is a yin deficiency, can lead to anxiety, which is so true, because even in Western medicine, if you have like anemia or blood deficiency in the body, which is that grounding, that heaviness that you need, then it can also trigger. And I think many people don't go and check that. And then if you have that underlying, you know, performative, high functioning, then that can make it even amplified.
Yeah. And especially if you're not, if you're disconnected, like if you're anemic and you're feeling exhausted, but you keep pushing yourself and then eating all the wrong foods or drinking things to keep you going, that is again you being disconnected, because you're not really tuning into your body. And we are so intuitive, like we are so intuitive, and a big part of my book is about embracing the sensitivity that we have, because that's the part that we're trying to push away, is I don't want to think about that. But the sensitivity that we have, connecting inwards and using that sensitivity, because when we're hypervigilant, we're noticing things anyway in people, like that's us being sensitive. We're noticing that person's not in a good mood, or why did that person say that in that way? Or that person's just looking at that person differently, like there's something going on. So you already are so sensitive, but it's outwards. We need to use it inwards. So you've got the skills already. But if you then start noticing, okay, I'm anemic, for example, what does my body now need to help me? And what can I now do to try and understand what's going on and why am I anemic? Where does this come from? But then giving yourself the right things to nourish yourself. It's like when we see one of our plants and we know that, oh, it hasn't had enough water. We just know it hasn't had enough water, or it needs to go by the sun. So you already know intuitively like what your plants are all about and what they might need. That's if you're a plant person. But if you're not understanding what your body needs, you're just giving it anything because you think, oh, that's fine. Just get on with it. Just get on with it. And that's not the attitude that we want. We want to be more intuitive and really embrace that sensitive side that you have, because we're all sensitive and it's not a weakness.
No, that's so true. And also like giving yourself that artificial energy, like coffee, it can definitely stimulate more anxiety. So it's not a good thing. And having a lot of thought is said to consume blood as well in traditional Chinese medicine, that and over-exercising, like those two things that you mentioned. So you see how the practices go together, and this ancient medicine also sees the connections. And I'm really curious about the rejection sensitivity dysphoria. What does that mean? And what you've written that, about this as well.
Yeah. This is really fascinating because it comes up quite a lot. Rejection sensitivity is focusing more on like when we're sensitive, we don't really understand the sensitivity being that we are. So what we're doing is we connect to different things and people. And what we're looking for is we're looking for evidence of why we are not enough. Because deep down we have a root, and the root within us is saying, I don't feel enough. So if someone, you're out with your friends and someone turns around and says, oh, I'm feeling a little bit tired, instantly you're like, they don't want to hang out with me. They don't want to be here. Maybe I said something wrong. Maybe I'm not, maybe I didn't give them enough attention. Maybe this. So you run off into catastrophizing, but you now have created a narrative from something that's happened from the place of I'm not good enough, because you are trying to avoid rejection. You do not want rejection. Because if there's any form of rejection in your physical world, that reminds you, see, I'm not enough. So we are avoiding that at any cost. So we give and we give and we give and we make sure everyone's okay. But as soon as we suss out that someone is going to reject us at any point, that's the sensitivity side. We're looking for it constantly. It's like having a little elf on your shoulder, and the elf's just looking out for, oh, look, what's that person? Oh, no, look at that person. And that, no, that's going to happen. And it could be something really simple, like someone sends you an email saying, hey, I need to cancel our meeting. There's no explanation. There's nothing. And that's it. It's like, oh, my God, they don't like me. What's wrong? Like, what am I going to do next time I see that? And we've gone off in 10 different stories. And it's like, right, come back. Let's just ask them. And that's what the book sort of shows you, is how do we reframe rejection sensitivity? And reframing it is, yes, we have this. We may have this feeling of not being good enough, but you also have a feeling of being enough. And how do we nurture more of that? But then also, how do you notice when you are sensitive and you do pick up on things, it's you challenging that part, that, and rather than you going into the narrative, I'm bad, I'm not a good person, I'm like this, I've upset them, I've hurt them, I'm not good enough. We can keep falling into that. It's like, come back. Let's take a pause and let's actually understand what's going on here. Where is it that you're running to? You think this, but what's the evidence showing us? And that pause that we give ourselves in moments when we do feel dysregulated is really powerful, really powerful, and life-changing.
Yeah, that's really good to remember and to practice. I'm really happy that you have that in the book as well, because it takes practice to get there and to stop. Yeah. And in some periods, it might be very hard if you have... you think that you need to prioritize other things, then you... I think that that's one thing that I've seen, like, not... It's these two types of being, where one is that you think that you're taking care of yourself by doing certain things. Like you said, you have things that you tick. But then the things that are really, like, nourishing, you're not prioritizing. And we, most of us do that because we have certain expectations for work, and then we have, I mean, just work life is a whole thing in itself, and how to navigate that. And then in your real well, it should be your real life and it should merge, but I think it's really depending on what you're working with and how you have to show up, because that takes a lot of your life as well. Yeah, your yeah. time. And
And if you're masking all the time, like if you're masking constantly, you are going to feel so exhausted. And what I mean by masking is, if you put on a front that everything's fine, everything's all okay, but actually things aren't okay. So someone might cancel a plan last minute and you've rearranged everything in your diary, and that was the only time that you were able to see them. They didn't know that you had done all of that. And then they cancel and you're like, oh, they canceled. But you don't tell them that's what's that's upset me or that's hurt me. Instead, you're just like, oh, it doesn't matter, just ignore it, because we don't want confrontation. We don't want this difficult conversation. But then people don't know how to treat us, and we aren't telling people how to treat us. And we're going to end up feeling that same feeling of being dismissed, feeling that people don't respect us. But that's because they don't know what we want and what we need.
Yeah, exactly. And what are the... it's something that you tapped into, the two sides of this high functioning anxiety. So one is you tapped into it, I think, now.
Yeah, so the two sides, like, it's the side that we show the world, but then there's the shadow part, the part that we feel isn't enough. And we feel like it's not enough because we're ashamed, where we feel bad. We feel like that side of us is like, it's too much. It's a burden. And the way that I tend to describe it with people is like, you've grown up in a household maybe where you've had like 1 to 10 tunnels in your head. So you've got these 1 to 10 tunnels, but people can't see that you've got the 1 to 10 tunnels, and they're treating you with like the 1 to 5 maybe. So when they're talking to you and you're trying to like behave from this 1 to 5, you try to ignore that part of you, the 5 to 10. You're like, oh, I better not show that because people don't get it, or people are going to think I'm weird or strange, so I'm not going to show that part of me. But by you doing that, you're then trying to just fit in, trying to be enough by giving that. But there's so much more to you, but you don't tap into it because it was never allowed. That nurturing space was never there. So we don't give ourselves permission to show up as we are because we don't know how. So when we then get into a space where we hit that brick wall, that's where we start noticing, hang on, what am I doing? Why is it that I've got my blinkers on? I'm trying to fit in. I'm not happy. I'm not okay doing this. Like, what is it that's going on? So that's where we start to embrace this other side, like the 5 to 10 side, where we're like, there's all this other part of me. Like, what is this? And I don't know how to manage this. And how do I like sit in it and learn more about it? And that's like the next sort of chapter for you, is you learning to see that you've got this 1 to 10 that's there. And how do you embrace it all rather than just coming from part of you and people only seeing part of you?
Thank you for sharing that. It's really important to take into consideration. And also, lastly, want to ask about how, if we're experiencing this, how to understand it from, like, if we go back further in life and childhood traumas and things that happen, how have you seen that can impact high functioning?
Definitely. Our childhood has a big impact. And I know people are like, oh God, here we go, another psychologist blaming the childhood. But when we think of our childhood, we need to also understand our childhood is all about learning. We learn how to be in the world by watching and observing and noticing other things. Like, if you've got kids, you notice that sometimes they do things, you're like, where did you learn that from? And they would have seen it somewhere. They would have picked that up from somewhere. So now you're in this space where you as a child have learned, I'm not good enough from somewhere. So somewhere along the line, something has happened and you have a belief now, and then you start presenting and behaving in a certain way. And that's why I've split my book into two parts. And the first part is all about unlearning, because we have to go back into the past and understand why these beliefs are there. Where do these beliefs come from? So there's a belief within you that I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. And we need to make sense of, where does that come from? Because by you understanding where it comes from, then you can move into the learning, the relearning of, actually, when I was 8 years old, I remember doing X, Y, and Z. And it's not about blaming your parents. It's about you understanding why you suppressed this other part of you and only showed up as with this part of you. What is that about? So when we go back into our childhood, and I've put this in the book, is, for example, a child who was emotionally neglected will grow up to be an adult who is a people pleaser, or a child who grew up not or feeling that love was conditional would grow up believing that they need to earn love. So these are very powerful in you understanding, why is it that you do what you do? It allows you to close the loop and give your inner child a chance to be heard, be seen, and for you to start to nurture your inner child and let your inner child know that actually you are enough as you are.
That's so important. Thank you for sharing that. And I love that you have those two sections of the book that is very clear and goes to the foundation and the roots of where it comes from, because otherwise it's like just working in the now with the symptoms. When we understand things in a bigger perspective, it can help as well, like that understanding. And I'm thinking that for those who are listening, I want to draw a card from my healing oracle card deck, and this is connected to any type of healing, and we'll see. We can together just close our eyes and take a few deep breaths and focus in to our heart and also our belly, and the emotional, energetic body right now. And I'll draw a card for us that you can work with. And we got card 38, which is the affirmation is, I have an energetic body and the power to transform myself and life.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, that is really, the energetic state does affect how we experience life and what we are creating. And I think that, and this is actually the card that comes after working with the chakras and all of the levels of energy within ourselves. So this card, I divided it into like our physical body, our mental body, and then our emotional body. And the energetic body is so subtle, so it can be hard to connect with sometimes. But this card is about transfusion and transformational energy, becoming aware of your energetic body through practice, through meditation, and also feeling that life force energy. And the body is sacred and given by Mother Earth to embody herself in many forms. But the energy that resides in us, keeping the body and life going, goes beyond the physical, emotional, and mental body. And I think that if we connect to that part of ourselves, we can transform that energy that might be stuck and creating a lot of disharmony. And it's about feeling the chi within ourselves. Like you said, it's when we come to stillness and silence where we can do that, because otherwise we're like up, the energy is constantly moving upwards. And then you can feel the vibration and energy surrounding you and emitted by the earth. It is the source of life and has the power to transform. And you can work with this, as I said, through sitting in stillness and silence, focusing on your breath and feeling the senses, like your clothes on the skin and the sounds, you know, going from the five senses and then going beyond this skin, both within and then out, how the energetic body is expanding and hugging you. And yeah, feeling, where is the energy flowing? Where is it stuck? So I have an energetic body and the power to transform my life. And I think,
honestly, that's really beautiful. I feel like it really relates to high functioning anxiety, because that's essentially what you're trying to do, is you are trying to embrace the energetic body that you have, the sensitivity that you hold, and it allows you to show up in the world in a very powerful way.
I'm so happy to hear that, and glad that this resonated with you as well. And how can people find the book? Because it's already out there to pre-order, and that's really exciting. And I will definitely also listen to the book, because I love listening to the voice. Are you also speaking in that?
Yeah. I love that. I did my audiobook recently, and it was one experience. One experience to actually read your book after a break and come back to it and realize, oh my goodness, this is everything. All your learnings in this book. So if anyone wants to get hold of it, you can go to my website, which is drlalita.com. Lalita spelled L-A-L-I-T-A-A. Or you can go on my Instagram, and there's a link on there, and it will take you straight to, depending on what area you're in and what country. Or you can just go straight onto Amazon and type in high functioning anxiety, and it will come up there.
Lovely. And I'll put the links also in the show notes for everyone. I really recommend checking this out, and I think it's so beautiful and helpful what you have created. I really want to thank you and honor you for that. I think it's going to help so many people, and I can't wait to also listen to the book, because I love hearing the author's voice and to like integrate. I need it as well, so I'm really grateful for that, and want to thank you so much, and congratulations again.
Thank you, Shireen. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you and your energy here today.
Thank you.